Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 123 of DM Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhoffer. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I'm doing pretty good, mainly because I totally forgot scheduling of certain things, of when things were being released and when I would have access to them and stuff like that. So because of that, surprises happen, and I'm in a pretty good mood because of it.
Like, was it like the DMG just randomly, the early access
that popped in on you? Totally. Yeah, yep. All of a sudden I get this email's in my inbox. It's like, hey, DMG's up. What? And I'm like, why do I have to work today?
time is a soup. Like, I was not expecting, I wasn't even thinking about it. Like, I was like, oh, I know it's coming out at some point in like November or whatever. And then I forgot early access for the digital version, which I'm excited. I've digitally leafed through it some. I know you have too. We're going to talk about it a little bit here shortly. But the thing I got even more excited about, I think, was the email that my physical copy has shipped. Yes. And is coming to me, because especially for something like the DMG, I love just holding the real book in my hands, being able to leaf through it, see the art, and look through that. With like, there's like, most of my reading these days is audiobook. Yeah. Just from a time perspective, right? That's just kind of how, in this current stage of life, I consume my books. But there are certain few that I really just like to sit down and just like page through and read. And the DMG is definitely one of those books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I am just really, really, you know, like sitting here with bated breath, waiting for that book to arrive. I hope it gets here before I go out of town, because I would like to take it with me so I have something to read and look through in the car. But we'll see what happens. So yeah, if that thing arrives, it's going to be great. And just a little spoiler before we go deep into it and everything, I got to say that we're like 3 minutes into the show. I'm just going to throw it out there. If you ever have wanted to DM before, or on top of that, if you're like, you know, worried about going from the 2014 to the 2024 rules or anything like that, this DMG is the book you want for it. Just to get in there to look at it. Everything that I've seen in there is like, they're not kidding. It's a complete rework and update to the 2014 version. And I'm loving so much of it and how it's laid out and set up and all that.
Yeah.
We'll go into more detail, of course, but I mean, that, like, just right off the bat, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat something that doesn't need any more sugar, because I am in love with this book.
Yeah. And we will hopefully be able to go a little more in depth and behind the scenes in our next episode for the DMG. Because if all scheduling and stuff works out, we have a really fun interview that I'm very excited for. Yeah. This next episode. So we're going to kind of cover this from our side, but I'm excited to look a little bit more behind the scenes. First off though, before we dive into the DMG, just a little update on the monster manual that is coming out here in a few months. And this was an article on Screen Rant about the designers explaining some of the balance changes. So pretty much they come out, They've basically come out and say, that the original DMG, the math was off. So they've literally just come out and admitted the math was off.
Yeah, a bit of an understatement, really.
Yeah, the math was off pretty much post level 5, and just got worse from there. But yeah, they said, the revised table of encounter difficulty is meant to be simpler to use. It's a very simple XP budget that allows you to calculate and spend without multipliers for the numbers of creatures involved. Cause it turned out that that doesn't have as big of an impact as we thought it did 10 years ago, and the numbers get significantly higher at higher levels. That's not because the characters are more powerful now. It's because the math was off 10 years ago, so we fixed it.
Yeah.
So it's a really big deal. I'm very excited to see what these new 2024 changes are to some of the math and the challenge ratings of monsters and such. Because yeah, as I said, once you get past level five, pretty much you can set everything to deadly. And it just, as far as the math is concerned, like literally every encounter I do in D&D Beyond, pretty much, except for the very earliest levels, is just deadly.
And even then, it's sometimes
most of them aren't deadly.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, oh, you got two rounds before your monsters died. Ta-da!
Yeah, sometimes I just kind of go, yeah, far beyond deadly. The players can usually handle a lot more than that. So I'm very interested to see what these new monsters look like. But to the counterpoint of them, there is definitely a little bit of power creep in 2024. So just know that, I think we've talked about this a little bit, just know that if you have switched your characters to 2024, that you're going to have to do a little more oomph than you might have normally done with a 2014 party until that new monster manual drops.
Yeah.
All right, Ben. DMG. We have it. We have early access. We've started paging through. My first impression.
Hold on. But before we even do anything like that, we didn't get early access because we're special. We got early access because we're subscribed to D&D Beyond and pre-ordered the books and stuff. So it's available for you as well right now if you do that. So
yes, and it's in, and it is, the physical copies are already in your friendly local game stores.
Yes.
In fact, I was at mine tonight and I saw several copies of the DMG, and I would have picked one up if I didn't have it was already coming. Yes, if it wasn't already on the way to me. But it is beautiful. The alternate cover is beautiful. If you're a collector there. So, definitely check it out. Check your friendly local game store if you want to get a hard copy of it, a little bit early. But I don't know, first impressions, this book is laid out so much better than the original DMG. Mm-hmm. It just makes sense. Chapter one, it gives you the basics before it does anything else. Like, what does a DM do? Here's the things you need. Here's how to prepare for a session. Here's how to run a session. Here's some examples. Letting people know that every DM is unique. You be your own DM. You don't have to copy any one person, or any one person is not necessarily the right way to play. Mm-hmm. Ensuring fun for all, mutual respect for the players, respect for the this is amazing. This is the opening chapter. This is like exactly what you need just right at the get-go. And that was a huge miss in the original DMG, but that you get the basics, you get your running the game, you get your toolbox, you get the creating adventures and then creating campaigns. And then you have the cosmology, the treasure, you know, the bastions toward the end, which is great because it is an optional system. It's not going to work for every campaign, but for those that like it fits in, I think it will be a super fun addition. Mm-hmm. Then you get all the cool lore glossary, the maps, the tracking sheets, all those are available online too, if you want to go print those tracking sheets out. So just, right off the bat, the layout is just head and shoulders beyond what the original was. Mm-hmm,
definitely. And the thing is it has a really good flow to it too. It goes from, you know, running the game to the toolbox, which is right in there of, hey, if you're just throwing something together really fast, here's how you kind of run something and here's some stuff you can use. And then jumping in there, it talks about creating the adventures and then the campaigns and then building up from there with the cosmology and then treasure. Like it, it really does have the best way of just building on the previous chapters. And like, as we kind of go in and dig into some of these, like, I gotta say, how they've broken up some of these, it works incredibly well too. Like looking at, I mean, just the basics, you know, you kind of touched on it and everything, but I mean, it really does tell you what a DM has to do. And the biggest thing is, I mean, there's a section on ensuring it's fun for everybody. And that's one of the things that I really drive toward or push towards anytime I'm talking about D&D or, you know, playing with my group. I want to make sure that everybody has a good time, you know, myself included, because I don't want to run a game where I'm not having fun, because one, that's definitely going to show through, and then that's going to make everybody else not have a good time. But even more so, when I know that my players are having fun, I know that I'm doing my job well. And, you know, it's challenging sometimes, but being able to just, you know, have that be your goal, as opposed to, I want to tell the best story, you know, that could be part of it. That could be part of your fun, but that's not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is fun for everybody. So it's a good starting point.
Yeah. It's a great starting point. I think one of my like favorite chapters is the DM's toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was such a good idea for them to basically take, here's all the stuff that's not necessarily going to be applicable every session, but a lot of stuff that you might want to know, and then just put it all together in one chapter. Just like right off the bat, there's a section on like paces. Like, that's huge. I think this is a really big thing that it's very hard for a lot of people to just do on the fly. So having some amount of guidance in that is super cool. They've got info on creating a background, creating a creature, creating a magic item, creating a spell, like being like how to do like the traits, how to do their stat blocks, you know, all those sorts of different things. They've got tables for rolling on different traits. They got, you know, the like curses and contagion, like all sorts of really, really interesting stuff. I mean, heck, they got a whole thing on doors.
Yeah, which is really helpful and handy, because how often do your characters run into doors and they want to either break it down or lockpick it or whatever? It gives you examples on all that stuff on how you can actually get through that.
Yeah, they even got a whole page spread on death.
Yeah,
which I think is super cool, because especially as a new DM, it can be very rough to handle player character death. Mm-hmm. If you're not prepared for it, or if you made a mistake, or, you know, if you need to know what you're doing. Just it even like warns, like, hey, the best way to avoid hard feelings connected to death of a beloved character is make sure players know you're being fair.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gives you like four principles to keep in mind when dealing with a situation that could result in player death.
Yeah.
And I love that just death as a whole is covered in such detail.
Yeah. And on top of that too, they have different scaling of lethality in there. They have the idea of, like, you know, kind of death scenes of what's going on. And then even more so, they have a dealing with it. So, you know, if a player character dies, these are some options that you kind of go through. If everybody dies, here are some options that you can kind of go with. And it doesn't mean that it's, you know, if you get a TPK, it doesn't mean that it's actually complete game over. If everybody wants to make new characters and start everything new, you've got that fresh start. You also have, you know, they're basically, you know, chosen by some sort of divine council to be brought back to life. They could try to be escaping, you know, whatever their afterlife is. And one of the things that I never thought about, but I love this, is raised by another, a powerful individual finds the adventurer's bodies and has them raised from the dead, putting them in the debt of the rescuer. How cool is that? And especially the fact that it could take place like years upon years after, you know, the original story happened, you know,
I love that.
Yeah. You also get to play out, you know, they died. If it was some sort of big crucial fight and they lost, you can see how it affected and changed the world and everything. And they're coming back to, you know, redeem themselves. Like, that's a really cool adventure hook just right off the bat. You know, I like this. This is great. Rescue mission, create new temporary characters who are tasked with retrieving the bodies of the fallen heroes so they can be raised or given proper burials. You know, that it has a lot of different things to kind of just jump into and play with. So that's, it's not, you know, the end all be all tragedy. If a TPK happens, you have options and different, you know, story ideas to kind of continue going based on, you know, how people are feeling, whether they're feeling that something's final or not. And you can even have a mixture of, you know, what happens with some of the players' characters. You know, some might have, you know, died valiantly, you know, protecting everybody else the best they could or something like that. And if they don't want to continue that character, there's ways to go with that. You know, it's a really good, simple section in a toolbox of all places. I absolutely love it. I think it's great.
I like the escape from the underworld.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always really a cool thing to do.
Imagine a campaign within a campaign, basically.
Yeah,
it's everyone died. Side quest.
Didn't you essentially do that in the first three God of War games? You had to escape Hades, like, in every game.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, that's a great way to kind of symbolize it.
Yeah.
Other big thing in it I like, and this is, if you've been listening for a while, you'll know I have a great love for MCDM Productions and their 5e content, mm-hmm. and especially their minion rule that came out with their Flea Mortals book. One cool thing is that the DM's Guide actually now has like a mobs section to help speed up play when resolving outcomes with large groups of monsters. So they've actually got a nice little chart on what you can do, adjusting area of effects, example scenarios for basically their version of, you know, running those minion or large groups of things that are supposed to be, you know, mowed down fairly easily, and how to do average damage and figure that type of stuff out. I love that that is in there to kind of write in the DM's toolkit, because that is a situation that may come up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Be it hordes of rats or zombies or skeletons or, you know, large amounts of bandits or even high level players fighting large amounts of what would normally be like a single monster in one case becoming a larger group of monsters.
Yeah. And then the very next section in there that I love and it's my favorite is the non-playable character section. And the best part about it is that it has a whole bunch of just kind of names to give you. And the best part is like, unlike in Xanathar's Guide to Everything or whatever, Guide to Everything, right? Yeah. Anyways, Xanathar's, they have a bunch of different names broken up as, you know, this is like a typical dragonborn name or a Celtic human name or an Egyptian human name or, you know, just all these other names. And don't get me wrong, those name lists are great. I pulled from them quite a bit. This has names set up with kind of more themes to it. So if you're looking for just a common name, you have like, you know, Ferris or Lily or something along those lines, as well as like surnames. But then it kind of breaks down into more of like a feel for the type of name that you're going for, like guttural names like Grovis or Rogar, lyrical names like Damia or, well, Keyleth is in there. That's great. Monosyllabic names like Flint or Rook, and sinister names, whimsical names. Like overall, it's a lot of different kind of cool, fun stuff that you can just kind of pull from based on whatever NPC that you're just like throwing together really quick. You don't have to, you know, go to a fantasy name generator super fast, because, you know, if you have an idea of what the NPC is, you just look here and be like, oh, yeah, I know this is going to be a kind of a whimsical hobbit, and their name is Pumpkin Goldjoy. You know, it's a good whimsical name. So we're going with that. And then on top of that, they have different things that, you know, they kind of brief you on, like, you know, you can do a stat block with a created creature, you know, you figure out their alignment and their personality, what they look like and stuff. But on top of that, too, you can kind of roll on a table to get, you know, a distinguishing feature of them. They have different secrets that they could do. And of course they have the NPC tracker that you can kind of throw in there to keep track of all these wonderful things. So yeah, I love it. Oh, and on top of that too, loyalty is another thing, you know, keeping track of loyalty, making sure that if there's NPCs out there that, you know, you're not screwing over the NPCs that the characters are running into. You know, just one of those fun little things that's added in there and has some sort of like mechanic involved that I'm pretty sure wasn't in the previous DMG.
I completely agree. It's just chock full. We could talk about it all night.
I mean, just the toolbox, really.
Yeah. Yeah. What other things stuck out to you, Ben? Like for me, I think the other sections that really spoke to me a lot, obviously the treasure section is super interesting. They added a bunch of items. They looked at and touched most of them. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff there. They added more common magic items, which is a really fun thing because those are great to just do easy giveaways or consumable items. I love to give out. Because you can then give more stuff and then the players can use it as they need to. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Bastions chapter is super cool and more applicable to me specifically because I am running a mostly city-based campaign right now. So it will be very usable for my campaign, which I'm very excited about. All my players are level 5 currently. There's a nice tracking cheat for it. I wish D&D Beyond had it built in for Bastion tracking. That'd be super cool. Hopefully they will eventually. But I mean, until then, just looking through the options, it's big. It is a big mm-hmm. chapter. It's way bigger than I thought it was going to be. It is a very fully fledged system. They thought a lot about it as far as like building it, how big it's going to be, all these special facilities and stuff that can be used. So I need to dive in and like go through each of the different special facilities and kind of see what can be done and all that sort of cool stuff. But I really love the idea of being able to give my players another tool or interesting thing they can do, especially since the idea of a home base is much more ingrained for the campaign I'm running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the two chapters that are really kind of I think are like the bread and butter of this book are the creating adventures and creating campaigns chapters. Just right off the bat, the first thing in there is the step by step. So for adventures, it's step one, lay out the premise. You know, you give the idea of kind of what the adventure is going to be. Two, draw in the players. You have to give them some sort of reason to do this. Three, plan encounters, which obviously you want to have either combat or social encounters or, you know, just going through traps or whatever. And four, bring it to an end. You know, it just gives very simple steps and then expands upon them and grows it into, you know, hey, this is a really fun adventure. You know, you have your hook, you have your kind of plot and storyline with this. The whole, you know, actual adventuring part of it. And then, you know, bringing it to an end, getting it closed, and then, you know, ending that step in the adventure. But mixed in with that, you go into the campaign, and now let me know if this sounds familiar or not. So step one, lay out the premise. Same exact thing. Step two, draw in the players. Same exact thing. Step three, plan adventures, which is just kind of an upgraded version of plan encounters. And then on top of that, bring it to an end. And the fact that if you look at the fact that, you know, you can make an adventure, if you know how to do that, then you can easily make a campaign on top of that. It's basically just a whole bunch of adventures strung together, whether it's, you know, kind of episodic or if there's going to be a throughput through the whole thing. And kind of going through these chapters and looking at them and reading them and stuff, more so than anything else, I felt really good about the campaign that I've made, because a lot of the stuff that it recommends doing or talks about is something that I've been able to kind of go in and incorporate and, you know, put in my own campaign just because, you know, I've, you know, listened to a whole bunch of actual plays and have kind of thought about, well, what would I like in a game? What would I kind of like to do? And looking at it as a grand storyline that you're kind of going through and doing things with, which is something that's really neat. But not only does it have, you know, that sort of thing, you know, talking about the different conflicts, arcs, character growth, types of fantasy, you know, or like types of games or in settings and stuff. One thing that it actually really kind of puts in and goes with it as well, especially if you're doing your own, you know, campaign setting and stuff, is it talks about a session zero and about bringing, you know, the players in with their characters, talking about, of course, you know, like session zero stuff that we've covered before in the show, but also, you know, giving them ties to each other, helping or having them help craft the world and the experience and things that are going on. So like right there, it's basically, you know, pointing out, hey, this is all about, again, collective storytelling. We're building this world together. You know, they have something in their backstory that you can bring in and pull into an adventure or a campaign or something along those lines. And, you know, it's just something that's really fun. They even talk about having episodic or basically episodes or serials. So again, kind of episodic adventures or, like I said, one long throughput and different things to like get the players invested. Like, you know, having a home base or a bastion, for instance, you know, having likable villains, you know, NPCs that they really like. They talk about like breaks, you know, making sure that they have, you know, like downtime sessions and or like shopping episodes, which everybody loves to have. And it's just one of those things that it talks a lot about, you know, this big overall arcing thing. But by starting with the adventure in the first place and seeing it as just this small, tiny thing and understanding that it's just a bunch of those, it is a great way to put it. It's a great way to run the whole thing. And I absolutely love that it's laid out the way that it is in this book, because I think that it's going to help a lot of people who are, you know, too scared to really, you know, take their first step into DMing because they see it as, oh, well, I have to do a campaign and it's got to be this huge thing and I've got to create the whole world and all this stuff, when it just starts as simple as, hey, make an adventure. You know, there's some sort of sickness that is infecting the woods over there. Send the players in to figure out what it is. And of course, that can grow into something grand and epic, like the one shot that started my campaign, which I had no idea was going to turn into what it is, but it is. And we just keep going. And, you know, it talks about being flexible. You don't want to railroad them. It talks about just a bunch of stuff on how to just run the game. It's so good. Like I can't stop talking about it, but it's really good for anybody who is getting into DMing and has some fantastic advice. Like, in all honesty, those two chapters are the reason why I think that this is the Dungeon Master's Guide you definitely want to get if you're dabbling into DMing, or even as a player. It's something to kind of look at and see so that as a character or as a player, you can bring things to help out your DM to kind of build the world and, you know, like jump at those strings that are being kind of pulled and those breadcrumbs to understand, like, hey, here's a story over here. Let's go take a look at that. Let's go play with it. Let's see what's going on. So yeah. Anyways, I know that's just a long diatribe, but those two chapters are just the best part of this book.
Yeah, it's super cool. And I think the last thing I want to mention before we kind of move on to our secondary topic is the lore glossary. A lot of that, obviously, a lot of this information in the lore glossary is out on the internet and has been for a long time. But I think the biggest thing is knowing about it, right? Because this has got stuff from like 50 years of D&D that can just help enrich the world, especially if you're playing in a D&D centric kind of environment or setting. And it's big. Mm-hmm. Like it is fairly lengthy. and just has a bunch of the stuff. And it's really cool because it has a lot of stuff from the published adventures where you might have seen the name or heard of a place or whatever, but maybe it wasn't explained super well, or maybe it was just kind of thrown in there and you just assumed you knew what it was mm-hmm. because of this long history or whatever. Now there's actually a place to go look. And it's really cool because it actually has links to the stuff like Castle Ravenloft, the heart of the domain of Barovia, and the vampire Strahd von Zarovich. Ravenloft is one of the most famous dungeon adventures in the history of D&D, providing a horror-themed experience and inspired the creation of the Ravenloft setting and the adventure Curse of Strahd. And so on the digital side, they actually link to all those references, be it Strahd or Curse of Strahd, the adventure. And so having that type of thing, I think, is super cool. Same with like Icewind Dale. Same with like Phandalin, right?
Or Boo.
Yeah. And so I think this is going to be, I've started reading some of it. Because it's just type of stuff is just kind of interesting to me. But this is definitely going to be one of the things where when I have my physical book, I'm going to kick back and just like open the lore glossary and just kind of start reading through and learning about all these like famous names or famous places or you know, just the big events inside the D&D sphere so that I can kind of take what I want and use it for my stuff, or just be, you know, more informed if I ever run a module or something like that.
Mm-hmm. One of the, and this is a kind of dumb little touch that I really appreciate in this, is the pronunciation guides. But the fact that some of them have two pronunciations for a, you know, for a word, like, for example, one of my players, the cleric, worships the god Corallon. And I read it as Cor-Elon, which is one of the pronunciations, but there's also Cor-Elon. So based on how you pronounce it, there's two guides there. So it can go either way. This is one of the greatest things about a multiverse is that, hey, they pronounce it this tomato over here. They pronounce it tomato over there. Both of them are accurate. It's fine. It's the idea that, you know, I'll never laugh at someone for pronouncing something wrong because they learned it from reading it. So if they've never heard it, they don't know how to pronounce it. But this has, you know, a couple different ways to say, you know, some different names and stuff like that, which I think is just, it's a tiny little detail. I love it. Like Hadar or Hadar. That's another one that has two different ones. And it's entirely based on how you would come across it in a book. But, you know, I'm with you on that, where I love the fact that it has a lot of lore in here, and especially about things that I never knew or understood. Yeah, I've been playing D&D for a while now, and I, you know, started at the very kind of maybe mid to tail end of, you know, version 4. But I didn't know a lot of this history aside from like the R.A. Salvatore books about, you know, Drizzt and the Companions of the Hall. So seeing a lot of this other stuff is like, oh, this is great. This is neat. I love this. And the fact that I can take this stuff and put it in my own world, or, you know, make some changes here or there and stuff, is really neat. And if I do have players who, you know what some of these are, you know, they can definitely not metagame about it, but they'll be like, oh, that's from this. This is really cool and stuff. And like, even more so, it's making like, kind of re-listening to like campaign one of Critical Role, like the third arc, a little more interesting, realizing that, oh, Matt was tapping into some of this like real rich lore that's been around for at the time, like 40 years or something like that. But even more so knowing that all these things are kind of linked across the board. And the fact that, again, everything is now technically canon in D&D, I think it's great. There's a lot of stuff to learn, and it's a lot of fun to just, you know, sit down and read a couple excerpts now and then just to kind of learn a little bit about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And again, we're going to talk a lot more about the DMG in our next episode and kind of delve into it and its inner workings a bit. But I think from both of us, we can both highly recommend it mm-hmm. as a very useful tool for your D&D 5.5 games.
Yes, definitely. It is hands down a million times better than the Player's Handbook, and that's really good too. So yeah, definitely check it out. In the very least, take a look at it at your local game store just to kind of see some of the stuff that we're talking about.
All right. So then, shall we transition?
Yeah, I think that might be a good idea.
From things we're super happy about from a DM standpoint and from a DMG standpoint to things we regret from a DM standpoint. We are going to talk just a little bit as our secondary topic tonight about DM regrets. You might ask, Ryan, Ben, you're such amazing DMs. What would you have to regret? It turns out, plenty.
Yeah.
And we wanted to talk a little bit about it and share it with you so that you can learn from our mistakes. So, Ben, I know that you suggested this topic, and I'm sure you have a burning thing that you want to confess a DM regret.
The thing is, it has to do with my last session. And it's an action that happened. It was in combat. And we actually had to end the session in the middle of combat. So this thing is still going on. But it's one of those things where, like, you and I have talked a lot about, you know, losing your turn, whether it's a stun or, you know, paralyzed, you know, some sort of thing where someone loses their turn, or if it's like a really big heavy combat or something and, you know, someone casts something and then you're just like, oh, counterspell, we're just going to stop that right there. And I used to be all for, hey, we're going to counterspell whatever. If the players have it, I have it too. But then that goes back to, again, like I was saying, the idea of, you know, it's everybody needs to have fun. And so we're in the middle of this battle. And I've got someone who's got a magical effect going on where spells are not able to enter the zone. And this character had stepped outside to do something, and then my sorcerer banished them. Now, I rolled for it because I'm like, okay, we're going to see, you know, go with it, see what it works. They had a really high chance of actually succeeding, so I'm like, this is probably going to be okay. Failed it. They have counterspell in their spell list. And I'm like, I don't want to just negate someone's turn. I don't think that's fun for them. So I let the banishment hit. This is also a creature. It doesn't have any legendary action or legendary resistances. So I couldn't use it in that instance. I, in theory, probably could have given him a legendary resistance and then just said they had them going forward, but I didn't tune it that way and everything, which, of course, as I said before, my tuning is not that great anyway. Plus, this has come off of a very long multi-character kind of combat as they've kind of worked their way to this area. So I'm like, okay, banishment goes through. And as we're kind of continuing and going on, I just realized without that, you know, foe on the board, immediately the challenge dropped insanely to like almost negligible at this point. So I'm like, I really should have hit that counterspell. It's what it would have been the smart thing to do. It's a high level creature that would have done this. And, you know, they're getting up to a level where they're going to be fighting things that are harder and hit harder and are more challenging. It's time for me to start bringing this in. I mean, I'm not going to do it with every single spell cast, but for certain ones, things like that, I need to be open to this because at that point, I don't think I was having as much fun because, you know, it took a fun thing off the board for me. But then at that point, the challenge was gone so easily that I'm like, you know, I don't think that this combat encounter is fun for them at this point. So having said that, I mean, if my players are listening, I should have counterspelled that banishment, and I'm sorry. That being said, a little sneak preview of the next session. While that character has been banished and turns are happening, they're thinking about what they're doing when they're coming back. Just throwing that out there. Because in that instance, it at least gave me the opportunity to say, okay, what are they going to be doing in this time when they're away from everything? They're not getting beat on. They're not getting hit. They're a powerful like caster. What can they do when the banishment ends? So I've got a pretty good plan in place, but we'll see what happens. So yeah, that's the very first like big regret that I can think of. And it, since it just happened, it's still kind of fresh, still kind of hurts. And since we won't have the next session for another couple weeks here, I have no idea how it's going to play out when we get there. So we'll see how it goes.
I think that's a great example. There's certainly can be a lot of regrets around pulling punches. Mm-hmm. There obviously is a time and place for that. Usually lower levels. Mm-hmm. It can be a good idea to do that, especially if you build something that is too hard. But at the same time, especially as characters level up and such, I know that from a DM perspective, the players have grown close to their characters. As a DM, you might have grown close to the player characters. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly times when combat will be easier than others. But sometimes for the sake of the story, you can't pull your punches, or you shouldn't pull your punches, because it can actually make the story less interesting and less impactful.
Yeah.
Again, just from our talk about the DMG, if there is a chance for a player character death, make sure to telegraph that. Make sure to make it obvious that they're going into a deadly situation, right? The last thing that you want is players completely taken unawares from a death perspective. I think this is a really big thing. I have an example of it. I have a campaign I played in where we were just in a random encounter with level like 5 or something like that. Ran into this like DM homebrewed creature. The creature ended up downing a player. Another player was close enough to and they're on death saving throws. Another player was close enough to get that player a potion, but for some reason the DM had decided at the time that they couldn't, or they couldn't see them, or you know, whatever, in the fog or whatnot. And because of that series of decisions, the player character died, and we had no way to resurrect them. Mm-hmm. That ended up being the beginning of the end for that campaign, because that player character was kind of the glue holding the party together, or giving the party a reason to be together.
Yeah.
Even though the player was the same, the character was not. And sometimes that can have a giant effect on a campaign. Now, should a campaign hinge on a single player character? Probably not. Right. That might be that's probably a problem in and of itself.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was a player death that was completely out of the blue, completely untelegraphed. And there were some bad decisions on the DM's side that they later regretted a lot, because it kind of ended up like slowly destroying the campaign. And so just be aware of things like that. And I think that kind of leads into my second piece on DM regret is DM rigidness. Mm-hmm. This is something that's very easy for us to have and something we have to watch out for, because sometimes we have a story in our heads that we want to play out a certain way. And when it doesn't, sometimes that can make it, sometimes we can make it and try to force the story back onto our set path. And more often than not, that will lead to regret and less fun, because that will usually override things that the players have done. And so as a DM, we have to make sure that we have flexibility. We have to make sure that we are not so tied to a certain element of a story or a certain thing happening that if it doesn't happen the way we want it to, that we can be flexible enough to deal with that. Because that can lead to things that are unfun or taking away player agency, which you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, I've heard it said, some DMs should just go write a book.
Yeah.
Right. Because we have to remember, this is a book that is being collaboratively written as we go. So sometimes things happen. Sometimes plans need to change. And we need to have the flexibility to be able to do that if the situation arises.
Yep, definitely. And, you know, it's one of those things where I was lucky enough to kind of learn that very early on in my campaign. I think it was like maybe session 5 or 6 or something like that, where I'm like, okay, this is going to happen. And I need to have this guy like kind of blackmail my players into doing something, as opposed to like maybe trying to hire them or, you know, do something else. I had the set idea of like, no, this is going to happen. They're going to have to do this under duress. And, you know, it was a mistake, and it played out very poorly. And it was an experience that they definitely took the idea of that character and or that PC or NPC and like the whole situation differently than I completely intended, because I was kind of strong arming them into something. And I mean, that's a regret that I have. And I have since then done my very best not to, you know, put them in a sort of situation like that since. Funny enough, they're in the same city right now and interacted with that character again. And I was doing everything I can to try to make everything right. And, you know, it went a little better and left so much more into their court. You know, I'm like, look, you're kind of doing your own thing. This is what this person thinks. This is kind of what's been going on since you've left, but, you know, do whatever. And, you know, it's one of those things where I definitely learned from my mistake. And, you know, it's a different kind of regret of, hey, you know, I should have gone this. Well, I mean, it's still, I should have done this differently, but I took it as a very good growth opportunity. And, you know, it completely changed how I started running things and, you know, trying to figure things out, and ended up, instead of like, you know, super planning everything, it left so much more open-ended. Like, because of that experience, that's when I'm like, hey, I'm going to make a puzzle that I don't know what the answer is. We'll see what happens, what they come up with. And if something just seems right or like it could work, that's what the answer to that puzzle is. And because of that, you know, I've done that a few times, and I've said it time and time again on the show. My players are very, very smart. They're very have great ingenuity and come up with some of the most amazing answers to, you know, problems and puzzles and stuff. And I prefer that so much more, to give them the win and the creativity and not just to hold them to what I think should happen. Plus, it makes you look like a really good DM if you're like, yeah, this is, you know, a challenging puzzle and everything, and then they figure out some sort of thing and they think that you thought of that a long time before them. Makes you look really good.
Yes. Yes. I've probably done that once or twice.
No. Everything we have is planned. We know what's going to happen. That's what DMing's all about, right?
Yeah, stroke of genius.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. At the end of the day, don't get discouraged if you make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that is not super impactful from a player perspective, like, oh, you just made a combat a little too hard or too easy or something like that, just take that back. Do better next time. Learn from the mistakes. If it's something from a player perspective, just, we always say on this show, communication.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk to people. Sometimes stuff happens, right? And you just got to go, all right, guys, I'm sorry. That was my mistake. Or even at the end of the day, hey, we're just going to retcon this because no one had fun with this, or this wasn't a good decision, or this wasn't a good outcome for anybody.
Yeah.
It's okay to do that stuff. Sometimes that is the best way to do things. Just take all those situations as learning opportunities and do better next time. Especially from, and I say this with a lot of experience behind it, especially with the combat situation.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a very long time to learn how to build good combat encounters. It's, again, especially post level 5. A lot of it is far more art than science, especially with the combat guidelines that we have now that are admittedly broken and do not work the way they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will get better. I'm very interested to see if it will get better, but it is right now definitely more art than science. So give yourself time to feel things out, make adjustments on the fly if you need to, and you'll just get better as you go. Practice makes better.
And I'm not saying that I did the wrong thing, but also don't make your players too powerful too early on. Again, I love the progression that my players have had, and they're great, and it's amazing. Just understand what you give them sometimes and how to face that challenge. You're going to have to Dragon Ball Z it and make things just that much more harder going forward.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I really, really like consumables as magic, like magical item consumables, or limited use stuff to give to players, because then if you screw up, it's temporary.
Yep.
And it allows you to give your players cool stuff. And that's one of the things that we've talked about too. Let your players know that, hey, you'll probably find consumables as we go through this campaign. Don't be afraid to use them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to be super rare to get, because a lot of times, especially those of us who come from a video game background, can have a tendency to hoard all the things we get for that final thing or that big boss or whatever. And so sometimes it's just like cool stuff doesn't get used. And so just make sure you remind your players, give them permission to use cool stuff, because they'll get cool stuff all along the way.
Yeah. Magnum ammo, I'm looking at you.
Yeah. That's so real.
Yep.
All right. Exactly. What are your DM regrets? We would love to hear your stories. Make sure to email us at dndiscussions@gmail.com. Throw a message up in our Discord. We love talking to people through our Discord. And we have gotten so many actually really cool D&D stories in the last week or two, that people have just been posting. I love those. Keep posting those things. It's super cool to read about other people's campaigns and what they're doing as well.
Exactly.
Now, of course, before we wrap things up, a few things to talk about. One big one, if you use D&D Beyond and you use their maps feature, combat encounters have now been built into maps.
Yes, kind of.
Which is very handy. Get halfway.
Kind of, yeah. So I did some testing for science. Mind you, it's not 100% conclusive because took maybe about 15 minutes to just kind of play around with a couple things. And the lovely Nevermore helped me out with that. But it's essentially, it's an initiative tracker more than anything else. As a DM, you'll get a sidebar that'll have the initiative order and everything, as well as the AC and then the starting hit points for, you know, whatever tokens you place on the map. So because of that, you can easily drop things in and will add it to the initiative. When you defeat something and you delete it, it takes it out of initiative. The best feature is that you can have a monster, a mob, or a token or whatever hidden, and it'll still be on the initiative tracker, but your players won't see it on the map or in the initiative order until it gets to that point. And that right there, I think, is absolutely amazing. That was the first thing that I cared more about, because, you know, as a DM, you want to be able to track stuff that the players don't know what, you know, is there or what's going on. So having it automatically go into the tracker would have been detrimental. And it's like, it's something, a feature I wouldn't have used. Where it's lacking right now, which based on everything I've seen on D&D Beyond, I'm assuming it's going to be updated and changed, is that as of right now, when a player rolls the initiative, like on their character sheet, like with the digital dice, it doesn't update to your initiative tracker. So you'll still have to manually put those in. And I don't believe that the health changes either. On top of that, you can't tie a current like combat encounter that you made in the encounter builder to a map. So hopefully that'll change and kind of, you know, get that synergy going, which I'm assuming at some point it's going to, based on the fact that these are just different pieces of kind of the same puzzle. So once they get it all kind of connected, I think that's going to be in a really good place to really have that one-stop shop for a DM and for players too. But I'm definitely going to start using it with my next session, because it's got a initiative tracker at the very top, which is going to help everybody kind of see what's going on, where their order is, where they're lying and everything. And, you know, I'll still say kind of what's going on, narrate, like, you know, so-and-so, you're on deck, you're up next, things like that, to give them that. But this will help you like be able to pre-plan stuff well in advance. So it's a big plus so far from what I've seen.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's getting there.
Yes.
Yeah, it is definitely getting there. I'm very excited that they are improving that and building that in to be synergistic with the site itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good stuff. I'm happy with it all.
Also, from a D&D Beyond standpoint, if you use the site, there is a brand new free adventure that you can claim and run called Scions of Elemental Evil.
Ooh.
This is part of the year-long celebration of D&D and its 50th anniversary. It uses the 2024 Player's Handbook along with the free rules necessary to play the adventure. It is set in Greyhawk, designed for 4 to 6 level 4 characters. And they also provide character sheets for the 6 protagonists of the beloved 1980s Dungeons & Dragons animated series.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so each player can choose one of the characters that are pre-made for you or provide their own, obviously, level 4. It is just a short adventure, but again, more free content. If you want to run something fun, a little, you could probably run this in 1 or 2 sessions just from the looks of it. So it is free to claim right now. We'll have the link in the show notes on dndiscussions.com, so definitely check it out. All right, Ben, we have reached the end. But of course, we always like to talk about what we're doing in our campaigns. And I believe we have both played since the last time we talked. So, Ben, what happened? I know you alluded to some of it.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. So at the last session, they basically went into a secret passage underground. And then that's where we ended it. It started off as they went into this underground kind of cave network. Where, you know, this, you know, thieves group or smugglers or whatever you want to call them, basically, you know, a bunch of bad groups, a gang of ne'er-do-wells, if you will. They're the ones who have been smuggling those magical drugs, kind of through, they hired the pirates to try to sink the ship on the way there and stuff. So as soon as they get downstairs, one guy comes out. He's the guard. He's, you know, trying to identify and figure out what's going on. And my bard just immediately attacks because they are potentially getting, you know, these magical drugs on the streets for kids. And she is very much in a, I'm going to protect kids. I'm going to protect orphans. Like, it's kind of her big thing. And so I'm just like, okay. And we started this whole cave network full of all these NPCs. Just the call ran out, and it was a very long combat encounter as they're kind of going through, working their way, just clearing it out, just getting rid of this group. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of crazy. They haven't really done a big, huge, you know, defeat the whole thing first. You know, I'm kind of sitting here. I was expecting my bard to, you know, maybe charm someone to kind of get to the leaders and do something there, or, you know, kind of work their way through, or at least talk, because this is one of the, let's try to work our way through without massive combat first kind of people. But just that thing right there just kind of pushed her over the edge. So I'm like, okay, let's do this. So they end up going through like something like, gosh, probably like 16 to 20 minions or something like that. And I mean, they're not minions. They actually have decent stat blocks and stuff. So, you know, the players took a little bit of damage because, again, they're way leveled. But, you know, with the number of things kind of coming at them, I thought, hey, maybe I'll get lucky with some good things. And I think I did a couple hits, but, you know, not a lot. So finally they get to like the inner sanctum of the boss, his like big bodyguard, and then a caster. So, as they're going through, one thing that did happen though, is the guard that was standing outside, who he didn't join the whole fray because his orders are stand guard at this door, no matter what. So he stayed at his post. And they immediately charmed him, got him super drunk, like way off right away, and kind of figured out, you know, what was going on, who was in there and stuff. My arcane trickster rogue, she sent her familiar in as a spider to kind of look inside, see what's going on. So like, okay. So they have a chime of opening. And so what they did is they did ding, you know, the loud chime of opening. And then instantly, like in a snap, the door was open as if it had always been open. And inside there was a silver bubble on the ground that the leader and like his magical crony guy are standing in, and then the bodyguard is like at the door ready to attack. So somehow it's like time stopped or something, and just all this stuff happened, and then it was on and they started. So I got you know, the caster, he got a lightning bolt out because they're all right there, so just shoom, just right down the row. And the boss is a rogue. And he got a good sneak attack in, but with like three attacks and stuff, and, you know, did a massive amount of damage. And then the clutchiest spell that my arcane trickster rogue has is grease. And she tossed that down, and I was rolling like crap on my saving throws. And so he slipped and just had a really hard time getting up. This was not me pulling punches. This was, this badass fighter guy is constantly on the ground, and, you know,
this is your dice not cooperating.
Exactly. So disadvantage on his attacks if he's, you know, just going to do it from the ground. My paladin has advantage on her attacks, which she already has like a plus insane anyway. So, you know, this is like, hey, are you going to crit or are you not? Who knows? We'll see. So like he was kind of taken out. The caster, like I said, got banished, which again, should have counterspelled that, but it didn't. So now I've got a rogue who has no one to use sneak attack on. So he's like, you know, very much not going to do a whole lot. He's still got some tricks up his sleeve. So we'll see how that goes. And this is also after casting a globe of darkness that was dispelled by my bard. So it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm throwing everything I can trying to get this to happen. So, but yeah, overall, like I said, I got a plan for the caster. I'm still kind of working on a plan for the roguish guy, and we'll see what happens. So yeah, we'll start combat back up. They're on their fourth round of combat with them. And so
you can pick right back up in combat.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Oh, and I do have some people who did take some damage who are looking a little hurt. So who knows? We'll see what happens.
Exciting.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was a session that we went long and it was all combat, which has never really happened before. So yeah, it's kind of cool. How about you though? What'd you do in your game?
Interestingly, on the flip side, we have not had a lot of combat, or not too much recently other than the ad hoc, firehound. When the manor burned down partially at the end of the party, this last session was very much kind of a picking up the pieces, a very RP oriented session, which I absolutely loved. We got to do quite a bit with some background and lore. We got to do a lot of like them just kind of pooling information that they got, trying to figure out what happened. There were some interesting revelations from some of the NPCs. All the people have their own lives too. So there's like tasks and stuff they're needing to get done for their shop or, you know, for their job or something like that, along with trying to figure out some of the political machinations of what is going on. So the big ending of this was the reveal that there is this big holy relic that was recently rediscovered that is going to be paraded through the city as a like morale booster. Right. Because this war is going on and these border cities are barely holding out to like stemming the tide. And the big revelation came when the head of one of the big churches was revealed to be basically a bad guy.
Isn't that always the case?
Don't you hate it? That was talking to one of the other villains that they had kind of identified already. And so now they're trying to figure out what to do with this information as they're slowly finding out there are some of these very powerful people who seem to have very ill intentions. So I'm excited to see what they do with that as we kind of have been going fairly real time day to day while they each have their own separate things that they are trying to accomplish as well.
That's really cool. Like juggling all that has got to be tough for you. I mean, it's one of those things where you, as a DM, obviously you have a lot running in the world because you have to kind of know what's going on in different regions, different areas. But the fact that you have to worry about the machinations of the government, as well as just kind of the daily lives of everything that's going on in there, is a lot to track. So I got to tell you, I'm very impressed with that ability that you have of doing it. Plus also making it interesting because, you know, there's always the possibility and the chance that, like, you know, the humdrum everyday stuff could be boring, but by putting it in this setting and adding stakes to what they're doing, as well as, you know, the adventure that you're obviously giving them too, is really like impressive. So I got to tell you, good job on that.
Thank you. And it's definitely the most complex campaign I've ever run, for sure. It's definitely been a little outside of my norm, outside of my comfort zone, because most of the time when I run a campaign, I usually start it off in our session zero by going, I usually run a 50-50 mm-hmm. type of campaign. Like, you know, half role play, half combat. You know, usually you'll have combat every other session or something like that. Sometimes you'll go a session or two without combat. Sometimes you might go a session or two with all combat, but, this one has been much more, I think probably 70-30 where the combat, when it happens, is very meaningful, but not predictable or often.
Yeah. I mean, the stakes of them having a home base in that same place that they're having combat adds just a unique layer to it, because it's not like you want to be the person who throws a fireball in the town square and then, you know, sets the whole town on fire when you live there.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are rules. There are laws. There is a guard. There is a constabulary. Like there are all these things that a lot of times in campaigns, you don't even have to think about or worry about while you're just out adventuring, right? There's no laws. Oh, look, we just killed a bunch of people.
Oh, well,
like no one's going to come arrest me because no one cares. That's not the case here. And so it's definitely an interesting thing. But the group I'm playing with is very good from a role play perspective. And so it's been very interesting. And the characters that have been being developed have been very deep. And it's been incredibly fun getting to know them and watch them and see them like grow and evolve. So I'm excited to continue and, you know, see what happens next.
Very cool. And that just kind of inspired me to maybe have some sort of mini campaign or something that essentially follows the plot of Hot Fuzz.
That would be funny.
Yeah. I gotta do some sort of conspiracy, like, cult in a town.
Yes.
Running it to make it the best town in the region or something.
Yes. I love that. All right. Well, with that, we will go ahead and end our episode tonight. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. But before we go, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
You bet. If you want to reach out to us and, you know, tell us about some of your DM regrets or your thoughts and feelings on the Dungeon Master's Guide or anything else, really, you can always email us at dndiscussions@gmail.com. Or, as we've said before, reach out on our Discord. You can find a link to that on dndiscussions.com. Wait. Emails dndiscussions@gmail.com. I totally screwed that up, but the website is still dndiscussions.com. You can find a link to our Discord there, as well as links to our Blue Sky accounts, which is at dndiscussions, at tbkzord, and at Ben Bumhofer. So we're all there. You can reach us there. You know, we love hearing from you wherever it is that you choose to kind of communicate. But like Ryan said, our Discord has some really good discussions lately. So definitely check that out. Now, another good thing about dndiscussions.com is that it has every single episode we have ever done. So if you're feeling nostalgic, you're like, man, I want to listen to episode one again. Don't know why you would, because it was a long time ago. But you know what? Some people like to do that. And in all honesty, for the most part, a lot of what we talk about is universal to any sort of tabletop RPG that's out there. So definitely check that out. On top of that, you can find every episode on your podcast player of choice. So basically, wherever you're listening now, you'll be able to hear all the other ones. Speaking of things to listen to, check out Plus Five to Hit. It is the actual play podcast that I'm a part of. We are going through Rime of the Frostmaiden, and unfortunately, the scheduling goblin has come through and kind of wrecked our schedule for a bit, so it's going to be a little while before we're able to record again. But we should be getting something together in the next couple weeks, hopefully. But we are so close to the end on this, and we're in the middle of a very horrific fight, so we'll see how that goes. I mean, it'd be a real shame if we TPK'd in the final chapter before finishing the module, but we'll see what happens. That being said, this show, though, DN Discussions, thank you everybody for listening. It is a treat to be able to talk to Ryan about Dungeons and Dragons and other VTTs. You know, it's late at night and I'm starting to be able to lose my whole focus to talk, so we're going with that. But thank you very much for all of your support. If you want to support us a little bit more, go ahead and leave 5-star reviews wherever you are, you know, listening to this. It only helps us out. And so that being said, thank you again for listening, everybody. And until next time, roll high and be good to each other.
And as a final note, if you are listening to this the first day of release, which is going to be November 6th, make sure if you are in the U.S., to get out, vote, exercise your constitutional right for democracy.
Except it's November 5th because your clock is already past midnight and you're using it as tomorrow. So November 5th, Tuesday.
You're right. November 5th. God. This is why we shouldn't do things this late. Time zones are fun. It's technically not November 5th in your time zone.
No, I got four more minutes.
Tuesday. It's a Tuesday. Go vote if you're in the U.S. We love you guys. Thanks so much for listening. Take care, and we'll see you soon.